From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
That movie Cowboys, and this week we are kicking off Rock Month, and with us for the first time in a while, returning back, is Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hi, Stu.
Hello, everyone.
How does it feel to be behind the microphone once again?
It's a big relief, let's say that much. I got very, very close apparently last week to doing Dirty Harry, and I just missed out. And yeah, I was not going to miss this one for the world. So yes. Very, very nice to be back.
Yes, and this was we decided that June was going to be Rock Month. We were going to talk about rock and roll, maybe rock and roll movies. We're kind of playing it by ear as far as what we do, but you know, definitely going to look at bands in particular. And this week we're putting our spotlight on Van Halen, the David Lee Roth years, the good stuff, the best stuff. We're all big David Lee Roth fans. I don't know if it's come through on the show or not, but
well, when John goes around Nick and Lee Roth's line of, we don't put iced tea in our Jack Daniels, I think it's fair to say that we are.
Yeah.
And if you look at John's Twitter, it says model citizen, zero discipline.
Does.
Yeah, that's true.
Of course, after the show drops, John will just go and change it to something else just to screw us over.
I think you should change it to another favorite David Lee Roth line. I want to be your knight in shining pickup truck.
Yeah, that's
actually, I'm going to challenge
There's
John.
There's
about
this. A dozen good ones. Yeah,
John, would you? It's going to hurt me to say this because I got a loss of voice. John, would you be willing to change it from that to how was
looking up the spelling? Killed me.
Make sure you get it right. Don't you miss a Z anywhere in there.
Bozy, bozy, bop. Yeah.
Where does your fandom with Van Halen begin, Stu? Because you're... Who's the oldest guy here? Is it Stu or John?
Stu is older. By a few months, yeah.
Okay, so where did it all begin with you for Van Halen? Because, you know, you go back a lot further. I mean, when I was started listening to them, you know, I think was when they were still with Hagar.
Yeah, with Hagar, yeah. It would be probably 82, I'd say. I think I saw the video on a show called, I can't even think at the moment. It was held very late at night by a very attractive woman called Basia Bonkowski, this Polish lady. They played You Really Got Me,
okay,
the actual video for that. Yeah, it's, I don't know if it's an official video, but it was a video anyway with Van Halen in it. And I thought, wow, it's awesome, you know. And then I like that track. I played that a lot, but I never really sought them out because I was like 11 at the time.
Right.
And still going through things and, you know. And then 1984 dropped and that was it. It was all over after that because that thing, as John would attest, that thing was just massive. You couldn't escape that album anywhere. It was enormous. Yeah. And then I went back and sought out the back catalog and actually liked 1984 the most. And at the time, you'll hear later my thoughts now on these albums when we run them down.
Right.
These seven albums with Lee Roth, and picked up some of the other ones like Van Halen 1, Women and Children First on vinyl, and Fair Warning as well. For some reason, Dive It Down scared me off. I thought the cover was atrocious. So
I don't know. I think both Fair Warning and Dive It Down have kind of weak ass covers.
No, Dive It Down's worse. Yeah, Fair Warning's odd. You know,
yeah, it's weird. That was when Eddie was trying to be a little artsier.
Yeah.
With everything.
But it's funny, in the middle of the TV Guide back in like 82, you would always see the Fair Warning cover as part of the Columbia House ad.
Really?
It's like really? it was selling that good, you know.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I thought it was, I had heard it was like one of the slower selling albums or something.
I don't know if they pushed it or something, but it must have sold good enough to be like promoted on the Columbia House ad is you know, that was a big deal. Okay. You know, obviously they were pushing it at the time.
Maybe in all honesty, I don't think actually Van Halen had a slow selling album at all during that first era of Lee Roth.
Yeah.
I think they were all big sellers, not as big as 1984, obviously, but they did sell well enough to get them, you know, world tours and stuff. No, they weren't playing like 600-seat arenas or nothing like that.
Sure. So, I mean, and, you know, 1984 was the last album they did with the original lineup, last one with David Lee Roth until recently with A Different Kind of Truth.
Right.
Which was pretty much the first one with David Lee Roth, the first full-length record in my lifetime, which is crazy to think about. John, I think you and I have talked a little bit about kind of the origins of Van Halen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they went through a couple names. You know, they were kind of a club staple in California for
right.
a while. Eventually, like, Rodney Bingenheimer, the K-Rock DJ, took Gene Simmons to see them, and he did some demos with them. And
right.
you talked a little bit about those, and you know the history behind that. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, they started out, right, well, they started out like David Lee Roth was in a rival band called Red Ball Jet. And I think the Van Halen brothers were in a band called Mammoth or something, mm-hmm. but then they ended up kind of just joining forces. It was teen band, garage band, actually a concept that I don't think is really around much these days
because
everybody's a DJ now.
Well, and it's funny, Dr. Drew on Loveline said that Van Halen played at his high school prom.
Yeah, they played a lot of proms.
Yeah, they played proms. Like, that's what bands used to do. They don't do that anymore.
Right, and they played biker bars and proms and strip clubs and all these things in the 70s that, you know, I've listened to some bootlegs, and it's pretty fun stuff because they're covering things like Budgie and ZZ Top and some amazing stuff they should actually put out legit, but from what I understand, there's no interest in it.
You know what? Van Halen, I'll say this, Van Halen were the most fearless band in doing covers. I mean, there was songs that other bands would have shied away from, but there was nothing Van Halen wouldn't touch and have a go at.
Yeah, I've heard him do like Zeppelin covers and sound great.
Wow!
I've got bootlegs of that. I mean, you can find them online. Like, they're out there, but there's bootlegs of them doing some Zeppelin songs, like in kind of deep cuts from Physical Graffiti, not like covering Stairway to Heaven. So
that would be terrible. I don't know.
Right, and then and I think when they did the Gene Simmons demo, Gene didn't like David Lee Roth, and it could be because of the cocaine or that he was known to use at the time, but also because Gene thought that David Lee Roth was a imitation of Jim Dandy from Black Oak, Arkansas.
Which David Lee Roth kind of admits he copped a lot of his moves from.
Right, he did. He really did. Because Jim Dandy had the blonde hair and wore the tight pants and everything.
You could see his bulge, you know?
Right, and he threw kicks on stage and did some kind of karate-type moves and everything. So, yeah, there's a lot of that. And apparently, Roth lifted a lot of his stage banner from Jim Dandy's, you know, between song talk.
Whoa, hot nasty.
Honestly, if you like Van Halen or even Guns N' Roses, you should go back and listen to Black Oak, Arkansas if you've never heard them, simply because they obviously inspired the singers in both bands.
Yeah, they're self-titled High on the Hog.
Yeah.
It's a great album. I thought the new material they put out was pretty strong.
Yeah, they're really talented. I saw them at a biker bar 12 years ago with like five other people.
Yeah.
And they played for like 2.5 hours, so they didn't care.
This photographer in Memphis told me in the 70s, when he'd see Jim Dandy around Memphis, he always had, like, smoking hot chicks with him.
Yeah.
And then he said in the 80s, Jim Dandy always had, like, used-up hookers with him. Like, he always had chicks with him, but in the 70s, they were smoking, and in the 80s, they were decidedly not. Like, they were picked up off of Beale Street or something, you know?
As David Lee Roth would say, here today... Here, gone later today.
Yes. But yeah, it's David Lee Roth got a lot of that from, got a lot of his presence from Jim Dandy and like his windmill kicks. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of, if you watch old Black Oak, Arkansas footage, it's kind of, it's a little stunning how much David Lee Roth actually took
It's stunning how like ahead of the time they were, really.
Oh yeah, like, they were heavy metal before they called it heavy metal.
Yeah, they like
they were
they
Southern
like
rock
an
before
80s.
Skinner.
Yeah, they looked like an 80s like hair band almost.
Yeah, they were like a heavier Allman Brothers type thing going on, and but they were almost like, they were Skinner before Skinner. Just it's amazing music. But
I've been to Black Oak, Arkansas. If you drive through it, be alert because you will miss it. It's like a street corner, you know, in the country.
But, But then I think Simmons had the demo and apparently tried to get him on his record label. I forget what all the shenanigans about that was.
But John, I thought the Zionist conspiracy meant that all the Jews had to help each other out, you know?
Yeah,
because they run the world, right?
Because, yeah, they were both hand-in-hand for the Illuminati, I think. It may have been one reason Gene didn't like David Lee Roth, because he didn't like Handsome Dick Manitoba either, so he has a problem with other Jews, I think.
Oh, okay. He's one of them self-hating Jews.
Other rock and roll Jews he doesn't like. But they did get on – they got signed to Warner Brothers, so they were like the hottest band in L.A. They were like the band on the Strip before the Sunset Strip scene really blew up, and I think they were the biggest band at the time. Which is funny because I read a book that also said that the other band that was very respected and admired was Autograph.
Really?
Oh my goodness!
Yes, and when by the time Autograph did an album, you couldn't tell.
Yeah, no, they sound. I always lumped Autograph in with the rest of the hair bands, you know.
Yeah, they were well liked on the club scene back then. People said they were amazing.
Wow,
you saw them live, which is hard to imagine. They got signed in the Warner Brothers. They got a gig opening for Ted Nugent, and Henry Rollins wrote a whole essay about how he and Ian McKay went to see Ted Nugent, and they said the opening band was amazing and blew Ted off the stage. And he said halfway through Ted's set, because people were chanting for the opening band, he just goes, "Hey, fuck Van Halen!" Like, he knew the beat.
And, well, it was funny because didn't Van Halen also, like, one of their early big tours was opening for Sabbath. And this was when Sabbath was really, like, not doing well.
Right, right.
And I couldn't imagine, like, seeing Van Halen open for Sabbath and going, like, fuck this Black Sabbath shit, you know?
No way, because the Van Halen brothers, the documentary I watched, they worship Sabbath.
Oh, I'm sure, but if like, I was a fan seeing them live, you know, if you saw Van Halen, Sabbath at that point wasn't, like, they weren't the Black Sabbath of the early 70s. This was, like, when Ozzy was, wasn't this, like, when Ozzy was just, like, in the throes of his...
This is when they're about ready to fire him.
And they were putting out albums like Technical Ecstasy, just, like, not their best stuff. You know, they were kind of petering out with Ozzy.
Yeah, but, and Van Halen was a unique package for that, what they called the heavy, I guess it's heavy, hard rock, heavy rock. I don't know if they really called it heavy metal at the time. I guess they did.
Nah.
I think I saw some early reviews, like, where they called it heavy metal, but...
Yeah, I mean, to me, they were heavy metal because of my age. You know, they were still called a heavy metal band at the time. Wasn't the case by the time Hagar took over, but... But David Lee Roth was like, okay, the Van Halen brothers love Deep Purple and Black Sabbath, and David Lee Roth was, like, more into soul music. Like, he wanted to be James Brown, or he liked a lot of the, you know, different type of performers. He wasn't really a metal guy. Like, even today, he says he doesn't listen to rock music. He listens to, like, reggae.
I'll tell you one band that bled into Van Halen's sound via Lee Roth was the Beach Boys.
Yes.
And
very much.
When Van Halen reunited with David Lee Roth, he was getting Cool in the Gang to open for them.
Yeah.
True story.
We should actually plug right now, before I forget, the Roth Show on YouTube, which is David Lee Roth Show. Any of you guys seen it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's fantastic. It's,
Is he still on the radio?
Yeah, what do you mean on the radio?
On, like, Sirius?
Wasn't
it?
He, like, on radio? Like, didn't he do a morning radio show in New York or
something? He took over for Howard Stern when Stern left terrestrial radio to go to satellite. And he lasted about, I think, 5 months.
Which is a shame, because when I've heard him on Corolla and stuff, I'm like, this guy's a natural on the radio. You know?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
He's brilliant.
Well, from what I understand, the show was barely produced and was kind of a disaster. And also, the Stern fans want Stern.
Yeah.
They're not really going to accept any.
Well, it's like Corolla didn't do too well when he took over Stern, too.
No, nobody could. And I think it's because that audience, you know, the hardcores are going to go with Stern. The others are not going to listen to somebody else in Stern's slot. And David Lee Roth, when you listen to him, he's kind of like, he would be like a morning zoo at an NPR station. You know, he's like making references to Henry Miller and all these books that you don't know, none of the listeners have ever read. And like, cause he's a well-read guy. He's very literate. And, there's a lot of, you know, he jumps all over the place, and it's probably too much for most listeners to handle, the casual listener.
The obscure references.
Yeah. I mean, he's not a dummy. That was one thing that I thought was cool about him. Cause I don't think I heard or saw Van Halen until like 83 on MTV and heard him on rock radio. But I noticed in interviews, like when they'd interview like heavy metal guys, like guys from Motley Crue or whatever, those guys were just dumb.
Yeah.
like they're talking, it's just like, ugh, girls. You know, they're just dumb as hell. And they interview David Lee Roth, and here's this super literate guy. I mean, probably on a cocaine rush, too, but talking super fast. But like, yeah, yeah, and then we all mix it up, and then there's this little recipe, and, you know, we got a little bit of your Henry Miller and your Huckleberry Finn, and then and that's what makes Van Halen a little different from everybody else. And so that kind of, like, he would do, okay, USA Network had this show called Radio 1990, and it ran every weeknight at 6:30, I believe, my time. And it was hosted by Lisa Robinson, who was like a respected rock journalist. And when 1984 came out, and I think it came out like New Year's week or day or like when 1984 hit, David Lee Roth was on that show every night giving like a 5-10 minute interview.
Wow.
Like they were promoting the hell out of it. And he was doing constant interviews. They were on MTV all the time. But I was into them before that because I was hearing a lot of the older songs on. We had a great rock station in New Orleans called Z. It's WRNO 100 Rock of New Orleans. It's now like a talk radio station, of course. But they would play a lot of the older Van Halen tracks, and MTV was playing the Unchained video, which was filmed at the Oakland Coliseum and just looked like a great party. Like, when you're a little kid, you're told what rock and roll is supposed to be like, and that's what it looked like, you know, more so than Kiss or whatever big rock. You know, Foreigner was probably the biggest rock band at the time.
Right.
Foreigner. Yeah. Huge. People forget, like, Foreigner was, like, the big... Everybody acts like, oh, the Ramones were selling platinum records. No, it was Foreigner.
That's
that
only
was
in
the big
Rob
guy.
Zombie world.
Movie. Right. It was, like, Foreigner and Journey, you know? And,
God.
And so there were the two bands I really liked on MTV, because that was a new thing, and I was really into it, was Van Halen, and I like ZZ Top. And, of course, I like them both a lot today too, but the Unchained video was played a lot. They didn't play the other videos very much, but when 1984, when that album dropped, it was just all the time.
Yeah,
like they were it. And of course that's when they were falling apart as well.
Yeah, that's when the wheels were coming off with their relationship with David Lee Roth.
Right, and it's funny because there'd be these interviews in like USA Today when that was like a paper everybody bought, where if you wanted your entertainment news, you had to get USA Today. You didn't get it in your daily newspaper. And there would be like Eddie Van Halen going, this asshole would show up at my house at six, you know, at 6 a.m. going, let's go roller skating. You know, it was just like...
That's when Eddie had a tongue back then. He could actually say those sorts of things, right?
Right. When he could actually enunciate that. But yeah, they were, and like I got the 1984 on cassette because that was the format everybody was buying.
So
then.
Did I actually. Yeah,
it was a cassette. I played that thing till it shredded. I eventually borrowed CDs from friends in the late 80s and got the rest of the back catalog and listened to it and bought, I think first I bought the vinyl records in the year 2000 for my own collection to listen to. And then I bought the CDs cause I think they just released the remastered, you know, reissue CDs. Cause the CDs from the late 80s sounded kind of, you know, they had a limit to them. They sounded a little flat.
So the first record they put out was Van Halen self-titled.
Mm-hmm.
The cover has, you know, all four members on there. It was from photos taken at the Sunstip Strip. You got Eddie with his Frankenstein Stratocast. What was it called? It was like his homemade Frankenstein guitar.
Yeah.
Frankenstein Strat or whatever. You got David Lee Roth, Michael Anthony, Alex Van Halen. All right. What do y'all think of this one? This is their first record. Personally, it was, I think, the first album of theirs I heard was 1984, but this was the first one I bought.
Right.
And
right.
It's... You know, I don't think there's a bad cut on this thing.
No, I don't think there's a bad cut. I think there's one track that's a waste of space on there, which is You Really Got Me. I don't like it. Yeah, it just, I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's fine.
I can do without it, you know? I can do without it.
So you kind of, like, I don't know. I feel that way about covers on some records. Like, you know, I like Faith No More's The Real Thing without the Black Sabbath War Pigs cover. It doesn't really fit with the rest
of
the
album. Yeah, it throws the album off. It's actually my favorite of their albums. Well, what I like is it runs under 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's every track's a winner for me. I don't mind You Really Got Me because it takes me back to hearing them on the radio for the first time. That's because I think it's the first song I heard on the radio for the longest time. They always played You Really Got Me.
I think what it is with me is that I heard that song so many damn times from watching that that video cassette I had of that first time I saw Van Halen. Just I heard over and over and over. It's just, well, it's not a bad cover. It's just one. It's when I play the album now, it sort of gets, you know, the skip
button.
It's the
one you can skip and not feel
bad
about it.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, and I don't hate it, not by a long shot.
But it's, I mean, I love all the songs on this. Run with the Devil, Eruption, which was like, you know, every retard with a guitar was trying to cover. You know?
Could you fucking imagine what it would have been like in 78 for just people to put it on to hear Eruption? Their ears would have just blown off.
Oh, it's after, you know, Ronnie James Dio said when he was forming his solo band, he wanted to get a British guitar player because he said every American guitar player was trying to imitate Eddie Van Halen.
It's probably true.
You know, so, you know, you could definitely see that in the wake of Van Halen's popularity. But, you know, Ain't Talking About Love, Jamie's Crying, I'm the One. I love Atomic Punk. It's that song sounds like an Enzo Castellari movie, you know.
Yeah.
Ice Cream Man, you know.
I dig that song. There's no bad tracks
there.
No.
On Fire, I like that one as well.
Eddie's just on fire on the guitar. You know, David Lee Roth's personality is, like, in full force.
I found with every Van Halen album, Eddie's guitar sound changes. Not drastically, but it changes, you know, it changes tone. This is the best-sounding sound that Eddie gets on his guitar, this first album, for sure, for me anyway. Not that I dislike the others, not at all, but this is my favorite sound that Eddie gets.
I think he sounds hungry on it, and that's what's so impressive about it. What I think is hilarious is, like a lot of great records, this album was not liked by the critics at all.
Yeah, of course.
The review, and I have it pulled up here, the review in Rolling Stone said, "Mark my words, in 3 years Van Halen is going to be fat and self-indulgent and disgusting, and they'll follow Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin right into the toilet. In the meantime, they are likely to be a big deal."
Oh, jeez.
Boy, somebody just liked those words, didn't they?
It is funny. When you look at the reviews, it's not like a negative review for 78, but now Rolling Stone lists it as like a 5-star album, of course.
One of the top 100 albums of all time.
Of course. And, you know, Robert Christgau, of course, hated it. Like, he hates everything that's fun, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because they don't know how to have fun.
No.
And that led to David Lee Roth's big quotes. Actually, I remember they were very critically hated. Mm-hmm. Like most heavy rock was.
Yeah.
Critics wanted you to listen to Roxy music. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to promote Van Halen. They didn't like party fun music because it's like, oh, that was the music of the jocks or whatever,
right,
or the hoods that they could never hang out with.
People that used to beat me up in school.
Right. And so David Lee Roth had that famous quote, and I use it all the time.
Yes.
He goes, "The reason that critics like Elvis Costello is because they look like Elvis Costello." And so it's just that you can apply that to a lot of things even today. Like a filmmaker asked me, he said, "Why do critics love Quentin Tarantino so much?" Because he felt like, I think it was David Ayers who we thought was a better writer. And then I just used that quote. It's like, the reason they like Quentin Tarantino is because they look like Quentin Tarantino. So.
And Quentin Tarantino likes to reference movies like they do and stuff. You know?
Right.
His movies are very, like, movie-centric, you know. They take place in the movie universe.
Movies for people who see a lot of movies.
You're
so.
Right.
Right, and with Van Halen, it was just kind of just raw, fun rock and roll. To me, I put it on the level as, like, to me, it's just as punk as the first Ramones record. It's just as metal as the first Black Sabbath record, and it's got as much bounce as, like, your first Donna Summer record produced by Giorgio Moroder, because it's got all those influences. You can, like he even says, it's rock music you could dance to. It's bouncy. It's party music. It's not some dreary kid hating his life from his swimming pool.
No.
You know? Well, shaking his fist at the world.
You know, it's instant good mood music. You can't be in a bad mood and listen to David Lee Roth or stay in a bad mood. Have you listened to the isolated David Lee Roth vocal track from Running with the Devil?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the greatest thing.
that goddamn it, I ain't lying to you, I'm going to tell you one time. Yeah.
It's funny because have you read his autobiography?
No.
Yes. Yeah.
It's incredible.
Is that the Crazy from the Heat book?
Yeah, and he tells a story about how he was recording vocals for the first album, and he was eating right and exercising for like 2 weeks and not smoking and not getting high and not drinking, and he couldn't hit the right notes in the studio, and Ted Templeman like, "Dave, what the hell's going on?" And then he told him what he was doing. He goes, "Good God, man, here, go smoke a joint, go get some cheeseburgers from McDonald's. And have a beer." And he said he went back an hour later and he nailed it. So,
really?
And in all the photography, Dave looks ridiculously fit. Like, you have him, like, bending over backwards on the back cover and stuff, you know.
Oh, no, and that's what I liked about him as a kid, because it's like I was doing, you know, taekwondo and stuff, and so here's this rock star who's, like, throwing these great karate kicks.
Yeah.
Because he was almost as much of a martial arts idol at the time as Bruce Lee, because David Lee Roth was on TV way more than Bruce Lee was, you know. Yeah, you couldn't see those real cool kicks anywhere. It's like he was, you know, they weren't showing the Chinese films on TV as much. And he's just going, right, wow, you know, throwing the kicks. And of course, then you read about it, the knee surgeries and the back surgeries and hip problems, bad sense.
And of course, Eddie had a hip replacement. And, you know, they've all had the old man surgeries. You know,
it's funny because Eddie had that hip replacement back in like 97.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked David Lee Roth. And then again, you get another great quote that you can use anytime. Is they asked him why he was in such good shape, and Eddie was a mess, and he goes, well, Eddie found out the hard way that you can't have a Marlboro Reds and cherry pie for breakfast.
You know what, Lee Roth, I'm going to say this, would be a fascinating fucking night out, just to have a dinner with him, just sit down and just talk to him. He'd just be full of stories that would just regale
you. You wouldn't have to do much talking. You know,
you wouldn't have to do great. You just do a lot of listening. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, anytime he's been on Corolla, it's just been great. Anytime I hear him on another podcast, like Steve Austin or whatever, it's great.
If you can try find him on YouTube, because they're kind of illegally uploaded, but he did some appearances on Opie and Anthony. And he actually, I think, hosted one day when I think Opie wasn't there. Or it might have been both Opie and Anthony weren't there, and he was co-hosted with Jim Norton. But he was... like, for both shows, he was amazing and went on for, like, 3 hours. Never repeated himself, never missed a beat. It was just, like, just great stuff.
When Corolla did his hiatus recently, he should have gotten David Lee Roth to host and not fucking
Jerry
Springer or whoever, like, all his parade of guest hosts, you know?
maybe David Lee went back to Tokyo.
Yeah, maybe.
Studying swordsmanship! Wow!
You know?
All right, so what's your favorite track on this album for you guys?
Atomic Punk for me.
Okay. Same here, Atomic Punk.
Mine's Little Dreamer.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's a good one.
I love it.
You really, there's no wrong answer, you know?
No, there's not. There's not like one song, okay, you've picked the wrong, yeah. No, there's nothing like it.
So, yeah.
I mean, I share your thoughts about this. There's not a bad track on here. There's just one that I just skip, but it's not a bad song at all.
You can do without it, you know, it's...
Yeah, I mean, if it's on there, you know, like if the song was on the album, great. If it's not on there, I wouldn't miss it, but I don't hate it. Let's say that much.
Right? Yeah, like I said, you know, when I picked up the vinyl of Faith No More Is the Real Thing, I saw War Pigs wasn't on there, and I went, "Oh, good." You know, like,
oh, really?
I'm not missing it. You know, it was only on the
That's
CD
right.
release.
It was a bonus cut on the cassette because I remember buying the cassette and noticing that was the bonus.
So the next album. Van Halen 2, again produced by Ted Templeman, same lineup. You know, we had major singles like Dance the Night Away, Beautiful Girls. It came out in 79. What do you guys reckon about this one?
It's a bit of a hit or miss effort, really, for me. And that's because the first two songs on this album are just awful. Especially that first cover of You're No Good. It's just, what the hell is that doing there? I mean, I get that they're trying to do something different, but that's the sort of track you could put as a cassette bonus at the time or stick it somewhere further down the listing.
So you don't like Dance the Night Away?
I've warmed to it. Let's say that much.
I like that one quite a bit. I don't know. I like Dave's vocals on it.
I was about to say Roth's vocals on Dance the Night Away are pretty exceptional.
Yeah, like, I mean, there are moments where I was like, you know, you can definitely see parodies of Roth definitely come from that song, like Dr. Roxo, the Rock and Roll Clown, and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, it just sounds like the chorus sounds a bit like that Phil Spector, you know, 60s girl sound a bit for my liking. I just... not very fond of it. I mean, for me, the album starts...
I love that sound. That's the funny thing. I got the girl group box set. I listen to Ronettes anytime.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. I mean, but I don't think it fuses with Van Halen very well, for my liking anyway. For me, the album starts when we get to track 3, Somebody Get Me a Doctor. That's a fucking standout song, that one.
Right.
It really is. And that's when the album picks up, as far as... I don't think after that, it's not a bad track, really.
What are y'all's favorite tracks on this one?
I like DOA.
Me too. That's my favorite, Dead or Alive.
Somebody Give Me a Doctor, I think.
Nice. Yeah. Good choice. Yeah, I mean, DOA is my favorite. I really like Dance the Night Away. I could take that one too.
Like I said, I've warmed to it. It's taken a long, long time, because they were the first two tracks, like I said, on the album. I just usually, when I had the vinyl of it, just like skip it over to track 3 or with the CD, just straight to track three.
And you have the little acoustic guitar bit, Spanish Fly,
which is basically a flamenco version of Eruption, if you listen to it properly. Yeah,
pretty much. And we'd see a lot of these kind of little acoustic tracks come up, pop up in other albums.
I should mention, though, as well, Boss Butcher over at Terror Troops said that his favorite song of Van Halen ever is on this album, which is Light Up the Sky.
Oh, yeah?
Interesting.
That's an interesting,
mm-hmm.
that's an interesting pick. Deep
cut. Yeah, but Tommy was his favorite of Van Halen.
That's that's an interesting choice. I always like it when people pick out deep cuts, you know. That's how you know somebody's a fan.
Do you feel with this album that they rushed it a bit? It just seems a bit hurried.
Well, this was the period where it's like, okay, we've got an album out, now we're going to put out one every year, you know. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
78, 79, 80, one after the other.
Yeah, the Eagles actually killed that with the Long Run, because it took them like 3 or 4 years to put it out, and it was endlessly delayed, and that's what started that trend. Because back then, you were expected to put out an album every year, and that's just how the market worked.
Not now.
Yeah. Now you could do a Chinese democracy and wait like 15 years, 20 years.
And then
you're like, what the hell was that wait all about?
I had
well, that's the thing that's what gets me. I mean, back then, the technology was all analog. So you physically had to use tape. You physically had to cut the tape. Mm. Now everything's at your disposal on your damn computer. You can just use, if you've got Pro Tools on there, you can use that, and you can, it's pretty much done for you. Yet albums are taking longer. I can't seem to work it out.
Well, it's crazy. Like, you know, some artists are putting out albums like mad, you know, like the ones that have home studios. Like, I don't know, like, you know, you see Devin Townsend uploading videos of him playing, you know, laying down tracks. He just put out a record. He's about to put out another record, you know? It's just,
oh, really?
Yeah, he's just, like, laying it down all the time in the studio, and he puts videos on YouTube of him doing it, and it's just him at home, you know?
Yeah.
And he, but, you know, I don't know. He's kind of an anomaly, though, because he's insanely prolific. But, it is kind of weird how album cycles seem to be longer these days, even though it's easier to produce a record.
I honestly don't think the talent's there.
Yeah.
I think you had to work a lot harder, and you had to practice more back then to make it, so I just don't think the talent's really there anymore.
And a lot of bands, like, would, you know, they'd put out their record, then they'd write the next one on the road or something, you know?
Right, right. Because it was all part of the experience. It was more like, you know, it was a tougher gig, put it that way. Like, couldn't just fly everywhere. And,
well, and like, you know, Van Halen was around for a while before they put out Van Halen 78 in 78.
That's true. They were around for like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. They had to really pay their dues in that California club scene and playing proms and stuff, you know.
I remember hearing a story about from Slash on a TV show once, when he was saying that one of his best moments of his life was selling weed at a Van Halen gig at the Starwood in 76. And just making a shit ton of money on that day.
Oh, I bet.
And I had heard that the guitar Eddie's photographed with on this album was buried with Dimebag Darrell.
No, the one he was buried with is a replica. It's not actually that one.
It's not that specific one.
No, no, it's the one that Dimebag's buried with is a replica. That one was actually, I think it was just a photo shoot guitar. That was it. I don't think Eddie ever owned it. Yeah.
Okay.
Nice looking guitar, though.
Yeah, because it was apparently like one that Dimebag really liked. Because, you know, Pantera was like always influenced by Van Halen being a one guitar.
Oh, God,
band, you know?
Yeah.
But so, all right. So we have our favorite tracks, Van Halen 2, 79. How do you guys feel about this record overall? I mean, I don't think it's as strong as the first one.
No,
but I think it's a solid album. I like it for the most part.
I think these ones go hand in hand pretty much. You can't listen to Van Halen 1 without listening to Van Halen 2. Mm-hmm. That's me anyway. You can live without Van Halen 3, which is not a Lee Roth one, which we won't be touching
upon. That was their one-off with Gary Cherone.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to bring this up with you guys now. Do you guys miss the sound of analog?
I do.
I'm not the right person to ask, because I was kind of in that transitory period growing up.
Yeah, I'm old and I miss that sound, and I hated the digitization of a lot of music from the mid-80s to
early digital stuff sounds terrible.
It's dreadful.
It sounds really bad. I mean, it's gotten a lot better, but still, you know.
Even like a country album like Steve Earle's Guitar Town, like from the 80s, sounds hideous with the digital recording and everything. It's so tinny. It's just, there's no bass to it, no life.
No? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's
just... I mean, I like Steve Earle's early albums, like Copperhead Road. They seem to finally figure out how to get that big sweeping sound in there, but a lot of the digital sound, and I'm not saying you shouldn't listen to the album, I'm just, because it's got good songs, it's just that the sound of it, it's something I'm hearing that probably a lot of people don't hear. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, because it was a digital to digital to digital, you know, recording.
The DDD you found on the back of the
CD
case. Yeah.
There was no analog mixing at all.
I mean, like when I listened to one, I found they could never ever get right until when they released the HD CD version of it was Peter Frampton's Frampton Comes Alive. I owned about, I think, at least two other versions of that on CD, and they were just awful. I just couldn't do it. And then, because I owned the vinyl as well at one point, and the vinyl just blew away the CDs. I thought, why is this? And I tweaked, well, it's the analog sound. It's just the ambience of the recording just fits the analog sound more than it does digital. But when they released the HD CD version, which is the expanded one, it replicates that sound as close as possible as what the vinyl does. And it just sounds fantastic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just other stuff. I listen to like 70s stuff like Boston. This stuff doesn't really translate to pure digital. So, yeah, that's what I thought more. And Van Halen's definitely occasionally that with their early albums. I thought, well, I think they sound a lot better in analog than what they do when they did their 2012 album, which we'll bring up later on, which we've got a few words to say about that one. Yeah.
For me, it was comparing Led Zeppelin records to the Led Zeppelin CDs of the 80s.
Ooh. Oh, really? The remastered catalog stuff they did?
They didn't do a real Jimmy Page remastering until like the mid-90s. I mean, you could get them on those box sets, which, God, I bought those box sets recently for like $3 on Amazon.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah. The box sets go cheap. But the albums were out. First, they were issued in 80s CDs. They didn't sound that great. And Jimmy Page remastered them in the early 90s. When they reissued them like in the mid 90s, they sounded decent. They sound good. And they're coming out again in remasterings.
I got them when they were first remastered. That's when I started buying them.
The first remaster will do.
Actually, Hunter, I want to ask you a question because I know you're a vinyl collector, right?
Yeah.
All right. How good? I've heard a lot about 180 gram vinyl. What's so good about it? What is it? What's it sound like?
I can't give you the like technical mumbo jumbo about it, but it has a really rich, full sound, and I don't think it degrades as badly as the lighter stuff does.
Okay.
But I don't know. I've just like some of the albums I've listened to. When you listen to something that was done in analog on vinyl, it sounds fantastic. But if it's something produced afterwards, it really has to be mastered for the format. And, there's some labels I've found that do a great job of doing that. And they do it in 180 gram. Some people do 200 gram, but I'm not exactly sure how profound that difference is. John, do you know much about that?
I don't know much about the technology with it. I do know that I've picked up, because Target had them on clearance, because nobody touched them. I have some Beatles 180 gram vinyls, and I got the best of the Steve Miller Band, and I listened to them, and they do have a really good, deep sound, and the records are noticeably heavier. But I don't know if it really sounds better than owning like a first issue Capitol Beatles record from 1965 or anything.
I think one of the things that's nice about it is that you're not going to get as bad of degradation on it from repeated playing.
But it is, they are based off the digital remasterings done for CD.
Oh, really?
They are. The sound mix is based on that. So it's not, like I said, it's not like, probably not like owning the vinyl from back in the day.
Right.
So it's not a faithful reproduction of the vinyl, so Boston's first album from 76 in. Okay. All right.
So that's Van Halen 2, and next year, 1980, we had Women and Children First, third record with Ted Templeman again producing.
Yep.
What do you guys think of this one?
Amazing.
Good. Really, really, really good. It's got one of my favorite tracks on it, so, and actually a couple that would probably easily take its place if wasn't on there. Romeo Delight.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
That was a show opener for a long time, I think.
Yeah, because I've got some bootleg concert videos that I found on different torrent sites, and they always open the shows with the Romeo Delight.
And it has David Lee Roth. Even when he was solo, he always did Everybody Wants Some.
Yeah.
That was a
staple. Oh, really?
That was a staple of his show.
Probably because of Better Off Dead.
Yeah. Whenever I think of that song, I think of Better Off Dead with the brothers.
Yeah, I think everybody does these days.
Although, I don't really care for And the Cradle Will Rock. I think that's a pretty... That song just never grabbed me, really. Never gets started for me.
I think that was the single, I think.
I know. It's on all their greatest hits and stuff. It's just not a song that does anything for me.
I think that's the one that is that the one you see the Solid Gold performance where they're lip syncing and David Lee Roth's wearing the giant furry boots.
Yes, that's the one.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it has those nice David Lee Roth moments where he's like, "Have you seen Junior's grades?" You know, stuff like that. It's got great stuff like that in it, but I don't know. Just the song, it just doesn't grab me the way some of their other ones do. I don't know.
Well, that sound at the start of the song is not actually a guitar; it's a keyboard run through an amplifier or something, some sort of sound. But I actually thought it was the Eddie hitting the top strings of the guitar, but it's not actually, it's a keyboard. So that was something I didn't know. But for me, this album, there's not one bad track on this album.
I like Take Your Whiskey Home a lot.
Oh.
That's a fun one.
I like Could This Be Magic as well, because have you ever heard it properly when they actually hear the rain outside? Have you heard that?
No.
Mm-hmm. When you listen to the song, if you listen to it with headphones on, you can hear rain outside.
Huh.
Like, you know, on the actual song. And for years, people thought it was actually placed on like a backing track on there of rain. It was what it was actually Van Halen. It was pouring rain outside, and they just went by the window, grabbed two guitars. Lee Roth was playing one, and Eddie the other one, and they just did Could This Be Magic. So that rain is actually an organic sound of rain from outside when they were doing the studio recording. But I mean, I love every song on this album. This is my favorite album of Van Halen's.
Wow.
Yeah, it really is. I can't pick it back. Even stuff like, you know, the lesser songs like Fools, I love that. Even Tora Tora is, you know, just a small little intro thing to Lost Control is just I can't pick one bad track on this album. And I can hear this over and over and over without a problem. And I probably listen to this at least I'd say once a week without fault.
Strong words.
It sure is, but yeah, I freaking love this album. It's just and it's one of the ones buried within the catalog because it's not Van Halen or Van Halen 2, and it's not 1984. It's just
right, it's
buried
kind of
in the others.
That middle period.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Which is where we are,
and I actually find that middle period of Van Halen's to be some of their strongest stuff as well. I mean, there was always
their most like underrated tracks are in this period because all the stuff that's on their greatest hits is like Van Halen 1, 2, and 1984. With, like, maybe Cradle Will Rock, Everybody Wants Some, and one or two tracks off of Diver Down and Fair Warning. You don't see a lot of tracks from those records on their greatest hits comps, so it gets overlooked.
You obviously told me that horrible Best of Both Worlds.
That's a terrible Best of record. It's like
The decision to do what they did with that was just mind-boggling.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Let's put Sammy and Dave, let's just like shotgun them together. Like,
I'm sorry, one side Sammy, one side Dave. That's what you do.
Do it that way. Like, you know, I don't care if there's new Sammy material. Fine, put it on the Sammy disc. I don't need them both together. It's so, it's all over the place.
You know what's odd as well with Sammy Hagar, I'll go over to him for a minute, was he only did four studio albums with Van Halen.
Yeah.
They did seven with Dave.
Yeah.
Yet Sammy was in the lineup. A lot. What was it, about 15 years, nearly? Something like that?
Yeah.
They brought out studio albums in that time. It's just bizarre.
Well, you know, I think they were a lot richer, not as hungry, didn't need to put out a record every year, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they could tour, whatever. I don't think it was... I think their brand was pretty solid by that point.
All right, favorite song off this. What's your guys' ones?
John?
For this one, Romeo's Delight.
Okay.
For me, I'm going to say Take Your Whiskey Home. Going for the deep cut.
All right, I'm going to go for Lost Control's my favorite.
Nice. So does that make it your favorite Van Halen song?
We'll get that later.
Okay, all right. Next year, 1981, Fair Warning. Again, Ted Templeman producing. This one has songs such as Unchained, which is the big single. So This Is Love, one of my favorite off the record, Push Comes to Shove.
Really?
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
Bump, 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 skip. That's what it is for me.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one, I guess it's not as pop oriented as some of the other ones. I don't know.
It's way heavier. Yeah. It's the heaviest album they ever did. Up till that time, anyway.
It's got a bizarre cover with like people getting punched in the face and
I think it was an answer to punk music because I think that was still considered a potential sales threat to them.
Really?
In a way.
Well, by 81, I mean, really. Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, you had the LA punk stuff, and I think that had a huge influence on them at the time because David Lee Roth was actually investing in like a punk rock art gallery, and I had heard he invested in like one of the punk clubs, like he was a secret financier or whatever for one of the clubs. Like he loved it, like he loved Black Flag and a lot of that stuff. He was really into it.
Hey Eddie, how about we get Craig Ginn to do a solo on this album? What do you think?
but no, he really liked the punk scene, so it. it's almost like an answer to punk music, which was still, I think it was probably at its peak or maybe starting to slide off in LA at the time.
And
it's a much meaner album. Supposedly they weren't getting along in the studio and they were fighting. And that,
well, I'd heard that David Lee Roth, you know, he wanted more of the pop sound. Eddie and Alex wanted more of a, you know, heavy sound, you know, and it seemed like Eddie kind of won that battle.
Yeah, but with this album, it seems that it starts really strong from the get-go, and it trails off by about, I don't know, the last few songs. It just, for me, like, the first five are fine, really, really good, really solid. Push comes to shove, it's okay. It's,
I like it. I don't know, it's kind of I get why someone wouldn't like it, but I think it's fun. I don't know.
Yeah, sure. So this is Love is good, but then the last two are just odd choices about.
Yeah, you know, Sunday Afternoon in the Park, One Foot Out the Door, they're kind of like throwaway tracks.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, yeah, it's kind of a frustrating album for me. I like it a lot, but it's a bit of a struggle to get through those last, say, three tracks.
Unchained is a fun song. I like that one.
Oh, Unchained, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, that was their big MTV video before 1984.
And it was the first time we ever got an F-bomb on a Van Halen album as well, was Sinner's Swing.
Really?
Yeah, huh. Yeah.
Yeah, he says something like, "She looks so fucking good," or something.
Yeah.
He just slips it in there.
Slips it in.
Yeah. Right.
There's stuff on there as well, like Hear About It Later, which is very poppy. Yeah, it's a mixed bag, this one. Like, Mean Street's really good. Dirty Movies I really like a lot.
Dirty Movies is fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's Lee Roth, just his little speech in the middle. Take it off!
Yeah, baby!
I wish I had the voice for it today to do it, but Unchained's one of my favorites with Dave, what he says. You know, say, man, that suit is you!
Yeah, that's classic.
You get some leg tonight for sure!
For sure!
And then my favorite line by Dave, tell us how you do!
Yes.
Classic.
All right, so favorite tracks, Stu?
Unchained.
Unchained, John?
Yeah.
Mean Street.
All right. Dude, push comes to shove, but Dirty Movies would be a close second for me.
Yeah.
All right, next year, 1982, Diver Down, Stu's favorite cover art, the Diver Down flag.
It's not just the cover art that's bad, my friend.
it's easily the weakest album of the...
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
It's got two covers in the center of it, Pretty Woman and Dancing in the Street, and it's got Happy Trails.
Big Bad Williams.
Where Have All the Good Times Gone is a cover.
Where Have All the Good Times Gone, yeah. I mean, there's hardly any original material on this record.
It strikes you as, I think it was a contractual fulfillment album or something.
And like, and it has a lot of like shitty filler, too, like Cathedral,
Little Guitars
intro.
Yeah.
It's a bad album. I only like The Full Bug. Like, it's the only thing I like listening to. And Hang 'Em High is okay, but...
I like how it starts with Where All the Good Times Gone. I really like Hang 'Em High a lot. If that whole album was like Hang 'Em High, it'd be the best, or just about close to it. Full Bug I like, and I like Happy Trails as well. I mean, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's just classic Van Halen ending. I think they used to end their shows like that as well, if I recall.
And it's,
well, they did.
Yeah, they did. That was often a farewell song.
And and their dad, Jan Van Halen, played clarinet on Big Bad Bill,
which is another cover as well. Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot you can say about this. I know on the documentary I saw about Van Halen that they basically class this as a Lee Roth solo album.
Really? I don't know, Van Halen. I guess it's got Marvin Gaye.
Marvin Gaye, really? Hey, well, you know what? What were the last words Marvin Gaye's father said to Marvin Gaye?
I don't know.
Come here, Marvin. I got a 45 I want you to listen to.
Notice that Dancing in the Street was not a Marvin Gaye tune. He just wrote it or co-wrote it. I think it was Martha Reeves and the Vandellas or somebody.
It was Martha and the Vandellas, yeah.
And it was the gayest collaboration between Mick Jagger and David Bowie.
That's where all the rumors started out, Bianca.
Really?
Them just dancing together. David.
Yeah, Bianca saying she caught them in bed together. I think that was all that started. Did not help with the way they were acting in the video.
No, it's pretty. It's a pretty what's going on here video.
Yeah.
Diver Down. This is probably my least favorite as well. Never got started for me.
It starts well, and it just drops as soon as they get the Cathedral. You think, what's going on here? Stuff like Secrets is just, I don't like Intruder. I don't like it. I basically skip tracks 3 through 10. I skip them all. I just go from 1, 2, 11, and 12, and that's it. That's Diver Down for me.
Same here. That's what I keep on my iPod for the gym. That's about it.
On your Zune?
So I have an iPod, a Zune, and a Zenith. And I have a Sansa disc.
You're trying to corner the market, John, are you?
Yeah, well, I got them for different purposes. One's for the gym, one's for running, one's for just listening at work. That's the iPod.
All right. Favorite song, Stu? Was it...
Hang 'em High would be my favorite.
High.
Yeah.
Full Bug.
Full Bug.
Come on, that's full-blown Dave right there.
Yeah, I'm going to go
Full Bug. Best part of a man! Wow!
Come on. I'm going to go Full Bug as well. All right. Instead of putting out... no album in 83, but they put out one in 1984 called 1984.
Yep.
And this was their monster album. Ted Templeman's back again. And it was recorded at Eddie's 5150 Studios. And this was my introduction to Van Halen. And I fucking love this record. I think it's great. I think it's
scattershot for me.
I love it. I don't think there's a bad hit on it.
Like Jump, for instance, for me, it took me a long time to make some peace with that song. I just used to, because you have to realize that back in 84 when it came out, Jump was friggin' everywhere.
Well, it's got all the synth keyboards and stuff on it. But
that's right. And you think, well, I'm putting in the Van Halen album. I've just had a disappointing one with Diver Down.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I get the intro of 1984. All right, okay, I'll skip that. That's just them, you know, jerking around. Then we get Jump with synth keyboards. Like, what's going on here? I will say, though, the video for Jump is probably one of my favorites ever.
Oh, it's great.
It is the one band out there. If you want to learn how to sabotage a video, watch Dave in this video here. He is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
He's popping up from the bottom of the screen. I always laugh when I watch this video. I think it's so funny. I actually find all of Van Halen's videos very funny.
Yeah.
Even the one for Lost Control, which is a very rare one, but it's up there on YouTube if you look for it. It's it's Van Halen in a mental institution, and Dave dressed up in a straitjacket with nurses everywhere. It's hysterical.
Well, that's what 5150 is, the police code for an escaped mental patient.
That's right. Yeah.
But this has a lot of the Van Halen staples: Jump, Panama, Hot for Teacher, which is basically Alex's eruption with that opening drum. You know.
Yeah,
it really is. And Oh Wait was a big hit as well for a little while.
Oh Wait, yeah.
Yeah. Co-written by Michael McDonald.
And yes, it was.
Was it really?
Yeah. Roth called him in to help him write this song. Because, Ted Templeman produced all the Doobie Brothers stuff, so that was a pretty good phone call to make.
I like House of Pain quite a bit. But anyway, well, y'all don't sound as hot on this album as I am.
I actually love it. Because it's the first cassette I bought of theirs. I love Panama, and I like Top Jimmy and Drop Dead Legs because when it was released, WRNO in New Orleans did a unique thing: is they played the whole album, and they made a big deal about that. Like at 9 p.m., really? We're going to play the whole album from beginning to end, and they did, and it totally sold me on it. But they would play the deep cuts in addition to the singles, which was the good thing about album-oriented rock back then. The radio stations would do that, and the DJs had a lot of freedom on what they could play. And I read people now kind of dismissing that format, but I'm like, man, it was way better than what you have now where you can't even listen to this stuff.
Right.
But to me, there's nothing really bad on the album. There's nothing I really skip over. I mean, I'm a little tired of Jump because I'm overexposed to it.
Sure.
It was as prevalent as, like, the Macarena or Wild Thing. It was
imagined.
A song you could not escape it no matter where you went.
I would imagine. I wasn't alive, but I would imagine.
But 87 or 88, I mean, I think that's when I started hearing the high school band playing at football games. So it was like, it was part of the national lexicon by then.
See, for me, stuff like Go Gone Bad, I can live without. House of Pain, I can live without.
Yeah.
Drop Dead Legs, I can live without. So it's a good album because the stuff that on there I do like, I really, really like. But yeah, it's a bit wayward.
Well,
but I don't hate it. Don't get me wrong.
All right.
Not at all.
Stu sounds less enthusiastic than he is.
I listen to it. I still listen to it frequently. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to get into those tracks, but I don't hate them at all.
I was going to say, do you think that the front cover's a little nod to Black Sabbath there? The cover of Heaven and Hell is kind of similar with the angel smoking, you know?
Could be.
I don't know. That just kind of struck me.
It's funny because it was supposedly controversial because it had a baby smoking cigarettes.
It's a cherub. whatever.
And then David Lee Roth said, well, the joke's on them because the baby's smoking candy cigarettes. Whoa! Which were still candy sold at the time. So
such a witty dude.
Yes.
Well, so, so even though this album was such a monster hit, the band basically fell apart after this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what's funny is the Panama video tries to like portray him as getting along. Have you noticed that? It really tries to push this idea that they were getting along fine.
Oh, wait, before we move on, favorite tracks, mine's probably Panama. Just love the guitars on
Panama.
That.
Yeah. Panama, no doubt.
Yeah. Panama as well. Yeah.
Right. Panama it is. So what exactly were was the entirety of the circumstance? I know Dave went on to have a good solo career, but it sounded to me like there was just like a, you know, you had two frontmen in the band, you know, David Lee Roth and Eddie Van Halen kind of vying for the spotlight.
I'll tell you one story I heard on, I think it was CNN. What nearly killed Van Halen was actually Michael Jackson, believe it or not.
Really? Eddie worked on Thriller, didn't he?
That's exactly right. They were talking to Eddie Van Halen, and he was doing an album with a rapper. I can't remember who it was. And he was being interviewed last year sometime, and he said, everyone makes a big thing about me working on Beat It, right? Doing a solo on Beat It. He goes, I'll tell you now, I was in that studio for about 20 minutes. That was it. He goes, I walked in, I said hello, I plugged in, I played the first solo I played, and I walked out. He goes, 20 minutes, I was gone. And apparently Lee Roth got so pissed off with him doing that, that it nearly killed Van Halen. And like 1984 was lucky to be made because he was that annoyed. They were already on the outers with Dave on Diver Down. I remember hearing an interview with Gene Simmons where Eddie Van Halen actually came to him in 82 and said, I want to join Kiss because Ace had just gone.
Yeah.
But Gene said, no, stick with your own band because Eddie's saying Lee Roth's driving me up the wall. I can't deal with him. He's impossible. But the problem was with Eddie Van Halen is that he was too well known. You couldn't throw makeup on Eddie and say, well, no one knows who he is.
He's the Unk that, Warrior.
Yeah.
God, don't get me started about that Vinnie Vincent Eddie.
He's the Frankenstein monster.
So, yeah, Gene Simmons actually told him, look, stick it out, write it out with Lee Roth and see how you go. And 1984 came out.
After that,
they sacked Lee Roth because there's a video on YouTube of him not long after being sacked. And Dave's angry. You ever see that. Dave's always laughing and
he always seems
he's got a smirk on his face, but he's really filthy on the Van Halen brothers.
Well, it's funny though, like everybody who's been in Van Halen who's not anymore doesn't really have a lot of good things to say about the Van Halen brothers. Was it Michael Anthony calls them Beavis and Butthead?
Yeah. Well, Ross, I've always taken it as Roth had a different energy level than those guys, and he's like wired all the time, and at the time, he said that he thought they were lazy, and he wanted to tour, and they didn't want to tour. They wanted to sit back and not tour for 2 years or something, and he wanted to keep touring and keep going, and, you know, I think there was just two different sets of, you know, ambitions for the band.
And speaking of touring, that made me think of the infamous Contract Writer, M&Ms.
Yeah.
But, you know, which was always used as this thing to say, like, what dicks Van Halen were.
Right.
But they had said that, David Lee Roth had said that they didn't want brown M&Ms in their M&M bowl because it showed that they actually read the writer.
Right. He said they wanted to make sure they were reading the contract.
And if they did, if that was wrong, then God knows what else is wrong. We're not playing, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, it actually seems pretty smart, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm sure the writer involved a lot of Jack Daniels, though.
A lot of Jack Daniels. lots of women in 80s bikinis.
Have any of you guys ever seen that infamous concert where Dave is just sloshed on stage? He's just... I think
I've seen a few of them where he's completely...
One famous one. I think he made like the top 10 most, you know, wasted performers on stage, and Dave made like number 6 or something for that show. I mean, they were all Van Halen were wiped. Dave was on stage, and they started with Romeo Delight, and he fucked the words up like in the first 3 lines or something. It's like, oh god, here we go.
I don't ever think of David Lee Roth as being like a heavy drug abuser, just because he always seems I think of him as somebody who did like some cocaine or something, but he always seems so lucid. I'm like,
I think some of that stuff's fake, because the thing where he goes, I forgot the fucking words, he's done it in a lot of concerts. Like, I think it's a part of the persona, I think.
He like the D. Martin of rock.
Yeah, yeah, it was kind of like a Dean Martin thing. Well, that's just like his great line at the US Festival, where he's like, the only band that puts iced tea in Jack Daniels bottles is The Clash, baby. You know? And the truth is, he was probably putting iced tea in his Jack Daniels bottle.
Probably was. I mean, he was sculling Jack Daniels on that stage on that show I watched. And I thought, holy shit, your liver is just going to blow out any second now.
I think he was putting iced tea in the bottles, and I think it's all part, because supposedly Dean Martin actually had grape juice in his glass, you know, with wine, and the drunk thing was an act, you know. And it's like, I think there's something. People forget that those personas are a little more pro wrestling work than they want to admit.
Well, like, pro wrestlers love them some David Lee Roth, you know?
Right. Well, it's like how Paul Stanley pretends to threaten some guy in the crowd with a laser pointer, and the guy's not there. He just says it at every show. You'll get a laser pointer up your ass! And just to make him sound like he's a tough guy.
Oh, shut up, fucking Van Gogh. Just play some music, will you?
So Van Halen replaced David Lee Roth with Sammy Hagar from Montrose.
Yeah.
Real quick, you know, where I know this is David Lee Roth years, but what do you guys think of the Sammy years? John told me something that I thought was really funny. He said that Van Halen kind of stopped being a rock band and started being an adult contemporary band.
Yeah.
You know, and true. I think that's pretty true.
Good point.
When I think of Sammy Hagar era Van Halen, I think of them playing to an audience of chubby dudes and milfy women, you know?
Yeah.
Like older milfy women and chubby guys drinking beer, you know?
Well, I will tell you this. Sorry, John. And John, you'll actually know this one as well. If you thought 1984 was big when it came out, 5150 was a fucking behemoth.
That's
that thing was, it was enormous. I mean, it had, oh my God, it was, if you thought, like I said, with 1984, with Jump and Panama and I'll Wait on the radio, this one, this thing was just peppered with songs all over the radio. Why Can't This Be Love? Love Walks In, Dreams. It was freaking everywhere, this album. It was massive. I'd love to see the sales figures, what actually was the biggest seller. If it was 84 or 5150. I'm actually curious. Because I'd swear it'd be 5150. It seemed like at a time when that came out in 80, I think it was 86 that came out, if I'm not mistaken. And that, yeah, that, like I said, that thing was just enormous. And I mean, I liked that. I liked 5150 for the most part. I like OU18812 after it. After that, what was one of the other ones? It did Balance, was it?
Balance and
For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge. I didn't care for those two at all.
Unlawful Carnal Knowledge. They love the little punny titles there.
But with Hagar was a good accompaniment to Eddie on guitar. He's not as talented as Eddie, but I like Sammy Hagar as a musician. I really do.
Yeah,
he hasn't got the charisma of Dave. No way.
No.
No way near it. For what they were going for, as John was saying about that, you know, adult contemporary rock, whatever it was, he would have suited them more than what Dave would have done at that time.
Sure.
To move in that direction, without a doubt.
No, and I like the Sammy stuff fine. You know, I like 5150 and OU812, and those are good records.
How could you not like the song titled Cabo Wabo?
Cabo Wabo is great. I love that song.
Well, I should say I've heard his Tequila Sucks.
Yeah, probably. I heard that was one of the big things that caused the breakup with Sammy, was the Van Halen brothers were kind of pissed about how he was capitalizing on Cabo Wabo. Flash forward to 1986. There was a brief reunion with Dave, and they recorded two new tracks for Best of Volume 1. Can't Get This Stuff No More, and Me Wise Magic. What do you guys think of these songs?
I've never heard them.
Really?
Wow.
I never have.
I think Me Wise Magic's a fun one.
I think they're both fun songs, because I was hearing them on the radio at the time. My cassette player was broken in my car, so I had to listen to the radio, and it was actually nice to hear them again. You know, and I didn't like the Hagar stuff very much at all. Like, I never listened to it. Because to me, like,
you're
that was
a Sammy fan too. You like Montrose and stuff.
Right? I think the first like the early Montrose stuff is fantastic. I love that first Montrose album. It just rocks almost as good as the Van Halen stuff. It's incredible. But what Sammy became with Van Halen, it just is a different type of artist. You know, he's like, it was more music aimed more for the female audience. It was a lot friendlier to girls.
Chicks, I know, love Van Hagar. You know,
right?
They love
it's all this kind of whip music. Like, all the songs are all this. I'll do this. I'll do anything for you. The Bryan Adams type lyrics. Whereas, if you go listen to Little Dreamer and tell me if you think David Lee Roth would ever sing a song like "Why Can't This Be Love" or whatever, you know,
or "Right Now."
Right. It would never happen. What, you're well, that's, telling me to that's be concerned thing. About the ozone layer? Ugh.
Yeah. Like you brought up, Hunter, when you said about chicks like Van Hagar, but they don't like Van Halen. Perfect example, my wife. She loves 5150. I play Van Halen with Lee Roth. She can't stand it.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to hear it at all.
Because it's a little more dude oriented. It's movie. It's about chicks and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like those Sammy's love songs, you know?
Well, like I said to her, I said, you know, I was listening to one of the early Van Halens, and I said, oh, you like David Lee Roth, right? She goes, no, I don't like him. I said, but you like Van Halen, right? With 5150. She goes, I love it. I said, so why don't you like Van Halen? She goes, I don't like David Lee Roth. I like the other guy. He's better. He's nicer. That was it. He was nicer. Seriously.
Perfect.
Sammy Hagar was nicer. He wasn't as gruff as not like Dave anyway.
Definitely check out those two songs though. Can't Get the Stuff No More and Me Wise Magic. They're both.
Oh, fun. Definitely. I mean, I'd never. By that time, when did you say these came out? 86 was it?
96.
Oh, 96. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, nice. 96. I thought you said 86. Yeah, I'll definitely check them out. But by the time of that, of 85, I jumped on the Lee Roth bandwagon. Yeah. Like, I like 5150, but it was a bit tame for my liking. Now you go over to Lee Roth with Eat 'Em and Smile. That's a different fucking...
Oh, yeah.
Bag right there.
Those first couple albums with Steve Vai are amazing. You know?
Oh, look, that... Dave getting Steve Vai was a massive big fuck you to Eddie Van Halen saying, yeah, you're good, but listen to this guy. He's better than you.
Isn't it kind of funny how, like, David Lee Roth leaves, he goes and grabs Steve Vai. Sammy Hagar leaves with Michael Anthony, and he goes and grabs Joe Satriani. They all grab these, like, you know, guitar school, like, virtuoso types. It's funny.
Now, remind me, John, do you remember the Crazy from the Heat EP that Dave did? Did that come after his leaving Van Halen or during?
That was before the breakup was official. Was it?
Yeah, so I wonder if that sort of had some sort of play into Eddie and Alex saying, forget it.
I think it did, because that was huge. California Girls was huge.
Like, oh, yeah.
4 months, that was just all you saw on TV.
That video was everywhere, yeah.
Just a jiggle.
Yeah, even that one. And, yeah, it was huge, and then I think it was that summer it was announced that he was leaving Van Halen. And it was probably well-known before then, but, you know, back then, before the internet, you just had to rely on newspapers and MTV News to give you this information.
I am Kurt Loder.
Right. And this was before Kurt Loder. This was back when the VJs would actually give you the news.
Oh, Alan Hunter.
Right. Alan Hunter and J.J. Jackson would tell you.
I went to Alan Hunter's son was a good friend of mine in college.
Yeah, Hunter loves bringing that story up about Alan Hunter.
I do.
Yeah,
I
like it's not the first time he brought it up.
Yes.
But, yeah, no, it was before. The solo album came out before, and then it was the writing was on the wall, and then, like, probably a year later, that's when we got the first David Lee Roth solo album, Eat 'Em and Smile, which is fantastic.
Oh,
I've heard the first couple Dave records, but I haven't heard any of the later ones. I wouldn't.
They're all right.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have you know that I bought A Little Ain't Enough on cassette the week it was released. And I think everybody else was listening to Nirvana and Pearl Jam. And I'm going out and buying the new David Lee Roth album. And nice.
That's a little segue of a story I read about Dave yesterday where he said that he hates Nirvana and Kurt Cobain in particular because he goes, if it wasn't for Nirvana, he goes, I was playing 15,000-seat arenas. When they came along, it dropped down to 1,500-seat arenas for him.
That's true. He played a water park. near my hometown, I think in 93 or 94. Which was unthinkable.
David Lee Roth, he stopped music for a while to be an EMT.
You know, yeah.
Did he really?
He was working on an ambulance for a while. Yeah.
I don't know if he really took a real break from music, though.
He
put out the David Lee Roth band album, the DLR band, mm-hmm. which does not have his name on it. It has, like, Betty Page on the cover.
Yeah.
It's a really good album. It's got John Five, I think, was on the rank of musicians on that album. Mm-hmm. And it's really fun. You can find it cheap. Anywhere, really good throwback to the 70s Van Halen style, but he didn't tour for it, and he never plays those songs on tour, but he did do the EMT thing for a few months, yeah. Which is he's a strange character.
I mean, his family's a bunch of doctors.
Yeah, like his dad is was a famous surgeon, I think, or something, and pretty much bankrolled the band in the early days, from what I've heard.
Really?
Well,
yeah.
Well, so after a while, you know, Van Halen, they had the little. one off with Gary Cherone. Eddie had health problems. It was kind of all over the place. And then, you know, Michael Anthony was kicked out. Like, you know, they had Sam, for their reunion with Sammy Hagar, Sammy had to like give up royalties to let for Anthony to tour with them.
That's crazy.
Jeez.
I mean, because the Van Halen brothers were like, we don't want Michael Anthony on there, you know. But
I wonder what went wrong with Michael Anthony. I mean, he's such a solid bass player. I mean, you can't really fault
backing vocals too. Did a good job with that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But yeah, he's playing in Chickenfoot with Sammy now. But yes. But so now we have David Lee Roth got back together once again with the Van Halen brothers and now with Wolfgang Van Halen, Eddie's young son, on bass, and they made the record. I think they got back together in 2007
and started, that's about right.
And started playing shows, and then they put out their latest record, A Different Kind of Truth, in 2012, which this record was so anticipated, at least like at around the workplace I was at, because everybody was, we were all big Van Halen fans, so...
Yeah,
we're all really waiting for this album.
I remember, John, you were really anticipating it as well back then.
Yeah, it was like me and the rest of the gray hairs, you know, heading into 40.
And me.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't really a big fan of Tattoo at first.
Yeah.
It was a weak.
I thought it was kind of good. I mean, it has some funny Dave stuff like, I got Elvis on my elbow. You know? I mean, it has some good stuff, but, you know, it didn't really... I was kind of worried, but then, you know, you have a song like She's the Woman, and he says, I want to be your knight in shining pickup truck. I was like, there it is, right there.
Yeah.
You know? There
it is. Now, weren't a lot of these songs actually old cast-off demos?
That's
from,
what I'd heard from the demo days.
They were all leftovers they reworked. You can find websites that tell you exactly what albums they were rejected for and how they reworked
them.
And
like,
I think they combined
it and write
tracks.
A bunch of new stuff. You know,
right.
Oh, I think they might have had a couple of new written tracks. Like Chinatown doesn't sound like anything they've done back in the day.
Yeah,
back then.
That's actually my favorite track on the album too.
Oh, really?
Really?
Because it actually sounds a little different, and like they're trying to do something new for once. You
Welcome to Chinatown. You like it because it's about Slope stabbing each other, John. Admit it.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
Jeez, Hunter. Usually it's Stu we got to watch for this type of stuff. Yeah. Or Garrow. But...
Well, so, yeah, this album, you know, I just was waiting so long for it. But what do you guys think of it?
I hate the sound.
It's really loud. I mean, this
recording
quality is eh. Yeah.
I mean, this album came out, you know, like, there were a lot of records. It's still this way, where the loudness war, records are just getting louder and louder. Like, you know, Metallica's Death Magnetic was a big offender.
The BC Boys' final CD is unlistenable because it's like, you cannot have a clear listen to it. It's the red so much. It's like,
You know, the main offender of all this is Rick Rubin. But I mean, not that this one wasn't produced. Actually, this is the first David Lee Roth album. It's produced by Van Halen and John Shanks. So, totally different producer for this one. But yeah, it's a very loud record.
Be warned, if you ever buy this and you take it home and you pop it in and you think you're gonna play it loud, I wouldn't be doing that.
No,
I'd put it at a moderate level because this thing is like these guys are saying it's ridiculously loud.
I had my headphones turned down quite a bit when I was listening to it today.
It was just the thing, like the mix of this is what I think I asked you guys a little while back, and I said about the sound of digital compared to analog. This is what the final nail in the coffin was for me for digital sound. I freaking hate it.
I don't know if it's digital sound so much as it is producers just like pumping up the levels on everything.
Yeah, but I mean by analog, by actually recording on tape. None of this was done.
Sure.
Hey, actually, or was this? I think this might have been done on tape, if I'm not mistaken. I think Wolfgang was saying that this was all laid down on tape. But it's mixed so goddamn loud. I mean, I mean, I don't mind the album.
I'm looking here, and they are talking about it being on tape.
Yeah, so. Yeah, okay.
I like it more than Diver Down.
It's better than it's not. It's I know some people who hate this record, and I don't get that, because it's definitely not the worst record they've done, and certainly not the worst with Dave.
Maybe they should go get the Gary Cherone record.
Yeah, I know. I actually know people who like that album.
The best David Lee Roth line ever was when there was the Sam and Dave tour, where it was Hagar and Roth touring together.
Oh, my God.
They asked him, where was Gary Cherone? He's like, he's doing the vagina monologues on Broadway. I'm sure he went, whoa, after he said that.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Oh,
the extreme
God.
You know what?
I'm going to tell you, if you guys have a Roku at home, please subscribe to the Roth channel. It's worth every second of your time. It's so good. It really is.
Yeah, but this album, it's like a good 20 minutes longer than any of the other Dave records.
Oh, God, yeah, it's like it scrapes near an hour, I think, or 55 minutes. It's really, really long.
Well, Roth said the reason that the old albums were only 30 minutes was because if you pressed a record longer than that, the bass was compromised on the pressing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If you spread out the vinyl, the bass isn't as heavy, so that's why they kept them at a certain length, which worked out great for them, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So what's your y'all's favorite songs on this one?
Chinatown, as I said before.
Chinatown.
Yeah.
Stu?
I like Stay Frosty, even though it's just pretty much a reworking of Ice Cream Man. I like Big River. Actually, it's probably my favorite.
Yeah, that's a fun one. I like
it. It's got a good groove on it.
Yeah. I like She's the Woman a lot just because of Dave's personality on it. I mean, he was really just pulling out it all on that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one I listen to the most on this record.
To me, it sounds more like something from his solo work.
Yeah, yeah.
It actually sounds like something off the DLR band album. So,
what was funny as well was I heard an interview with, was it Stern or someone? What I mean, he said that... as soon as the album was released, Eddie was complaining to Stern, saying, "I can't work with Lee Roth anymore. I can't stand him." So it's like the indifference had never gone away with those two.
Yeah, I mean, I think by this point they are really just tolerating each other, you know, because they're like, "Listen, this is the only way this band's going to make money is if we put up with each other," you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. I've heard Eddie's a little insane, though. Like everything I've heard so far on this podcast, it sounds like Dave's just like a handful, but I've heard that Van Halen brothers are kind of cocks.
Yeah.
I actually knew a girl in college whose mother dated Eddie Van Halen, or was dating him at the time.
Really?
Side girl, yeah, and she said she didn't like him at all. You know?
See, I can understand Eddie Van Halen being like that, because I've heard numerous stories, but Alex, I haven't heard a great deal about. I mean, he may be difficult to get along with.
He's like the George Harrison of the group.
You know, he's the one who actually gets along with David Lee Roth.
No, really?
I wouldn't doubt that.
Van Halen, they're like, that's the only one he's really friends with. Because if you look at the old interviews, like when Roth would be on Letterman in the early, mid-80s, it's up on YouTube. He'll make jokes about Alex. He'll always act like Alex is dumb. No, Alex didn't really quite understand the concept. But, you know, he would do all these jokes about him. But in truth, if you look at their history, it's like he's the only one he gets along with, because Roth was saying, that he talks to Alex Van Halen a few times a week while he's in Japan.
Huh.
And he said when they went to court to sue a Catholic school to get their pay, because the nun had claimed that they had smoked weed in the back or something and they weren't going to pay them, it was him and Alex going to court to get the money. Wow. Like they were the ones who were for the band. So I think Alex is the one he gets along with.
Well,
Alex is like a preacher, I think, or something.
Well, and Eddie's been in and out of rehab.
Right.
For, you know, drugs. Like, I heard he and Wolfgang got into, like, a fist fight backstage one time.
He's, like, doing music for porn films and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of a little out of it. And
I heard that, like, he and Valerie Bertinelli, like, you know, kind of lived like animals a little bit. I don't know.
Oh, he's not with her anymore.
No, just... I lived. Like,
oh, lived. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
But, well, when they divorced, it's funny because then she was on People Magazine with the weight loss bikini shots or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like,
she
it was like
good.
The, yeah, yeah, she did. It was like, whoa. And I didn't really understand.
Eddie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely like almost like a shot at Eddie or something. You figure he's watching all the porn all the time.
Yeah, just I read things that said that he's kind of a Grey Gardens type a little bit. Like,
right. Alex Van Halen though is like, yeah, I think he's like a Republican, and he's like hanging out. You can see him in shots with Mitt Romney and stuff.
Oh,
and,
nice.
Yeah, like at a meeting with Mitt Romney. Like, I guess he was going to drum at the inauguration if he won. So, but he's more of the clean living, more normal guy, I think.
Yeah.
So while Ross is an insane bachelor, you know.
Yeah.
What do you reckon of the Crazy from the Heat and Eat 'Em and Smile album by Lee Roth? You guys remember it very well at all?
I know Eat 'Em and Smile and Cliffhanger somewhat, and that's about it.
Oh, Skyscraper.
Skyscraper.
Cliffhanger. Yeah. What the fuck? Why did I say Cliffhanger?
I like Eat 'Em and Smile a great deal.
Yeah. Yeah, see, for me, that's
Yankee
like a
Rose,
point.
Man, is such... That's such pure Dave.
I can play Yankee Rose anytime.
Whoa, she's beautiful.
You know that Eat 'Em and Smile was the first CD I ever heard. Actual CD.
Wow.
Oh, wow. It was one of the early ones I heard. Yeah.
It was. There was a guy who our family was friends with, you know, with his family, and he just purchased a CD player for some insane amount of money, and he plugged in, and he had Eat 'Em and Smile. I was like, he cranked up Yankee Rose. I was like, what the fruitnell is this? This is just insane shit, you know? I was like, just blown away. And he played Shy Boy after that, and it's like guitars everywhere. I was like, holy shit, this is unreal.
Yeah, that's the best work Steve Vai's ever done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of it, I think the first two tracks on that album really starts off with Steve Vai trying to make a statement against Eddie Van Halen.
Oh, yeah. He's trying to.
Without a doubt. He calms down.
Look, you don't need a.
A crazy ass Dutchman. Yeah. Yeah.
He's also emphasizing the video for Yankee Rose pretty heavily, like in the first 10, you know, 20 seconds or so, where Dave's talking to his guitar. Yeah. And it's then the guitar's doing the laugh. Yeah, everything's a shot. Shot across.
Oh, yeah.
And Steve Vai, when he tried to form his own band where he was like the star guitar player, he just called it Vai, you know?
Right.
With that was when he had Devin Townsend singing for him. That didn't work out so well.
Well, he wanted to be like a Joe Satriani
type,
you know? I think it was his teacher, if I'm not mistaken, or, you know, one of the guys he ran across. But he was more like, he had prog rock tendencies, I think, the whole time.
Right. Like, if you listen to the Vai Sex and Religion album, it's you can hear the Frank Zappa influence at times, almost.
Any of you guys ever seen the one of the G3 concerts?
No.
Oh, I mean, they're talented, but they're just guitar overload. It's really tough to watch.
It's, my friends who love that stuff are all, like, music students, you know?
Right, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. But you know the song, actually, on Eat 'Em and Smile, I'm Easy, the third track on there?
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a cover song of a jazz musician from here in Melbourne. Named Billy Field, yeah. And that was taken off Billy Field's Bad Habits album from 81, which was a massive album here in Australia.
Interesting.
Yeah, and somehow Dave caught on to Billy Field's work via that album and covered I'm Easy on it.
So what do you guys think of overall, like, we were supposed to make a list of our five favorite songs of our five favorite Van Halen songs. Do you guys have yours?
The ones I listed off as the best of the albums are pretty much my,
okay.
You know, you could say that's my five favorite. It'd be like Atomic Punk,
yep.
Romeo Delight, mm-hmm. Mean Streets, probably Panama, and maybe even Full Bug. Yeah, I'd make it that simple.
All right, Hannah, give us yours. I know you scribbled them down before we recorded.
Atomic Punk, DOA, Dance the Night Away, Jump in Panama.
Okay, I'm going to go number five for mine. I will go Little Dreamer. I will go number four, Unchained. Number three, Lost Control. Number two is Rome of the Devil. And number one is definitely Panama.
Nice.
And it's hands down the best song they've ever done.
Shows up in like every other teen comedy too.
It also has a great video.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, it does. Let's go around the table here. Let's start with Van Halen 1. What would you give out of a 10 rating?
I give it a 10.
Oh, okay.
Easy John? 10. Easy 10.
I'll give it like a 9.5, I reckon. I'll just shave a little bit off there. Van Halen 2?
I'd give it an 8. I'd give it a 7, actually. 7.
I'd give it a 7.5.
Yeah, I think I'm with John. I'll give it about a 7.5. Okay, Women and Children first.
I'd give it about the same, a 7.
Okay.
I'll go 7.5 again on that.
I'll give it a 10 for me. Okay, Fair Warning.
6.
9.
Oh, okay, 9. I'll give it about a 7.5, I think. All right, this one's going to be good. Dive It Down. Where are we going?
4.
Yeah, I'm going at 4.
Yeah, 4 sounds about right, I think. 1984.
I give it a 9.
Give it a 9.5.
Yeah, I'll give it an 8, I think. Okay, the next one, Different Kind of Truth. This will be interesting.
I'm kind of 6.5, 7, somewhere around there.
Uh-huh.
I'm in that, about 6.
Yeah, I'd give it a 5. I think the sound really, really kills it for me.
Yeah, it hurts. I think the songs are pretty strong on it, but...
For the most part, it's solid, yeah, but the sound is just, yeah.
I'm with you 100%. I was kind of having trouble listening to it today.
Needs 180-gram vinyl remastering.
That was my next question. I wonder how they would translate the vinyl.
I'm sure there's got to be love a pressing that was done.
I'm sure there was. I think I've seen one floating around the stores at least.
No, I'm sure there was, because vinyl is, it's funny. Like, teenagers at my grocery store were talking about picking up vinyl to, you know, yeah, hey man, I gotta go get some vinyl today. I got $5 left out of my check.
It's a bubble, I dare say.
It's strange.
Yeah. Now.
Yeah, there is a vinyl. It goes for $41 though. Jeez.
That's the price you pay these days, you vinyl junkies.
Jeez.
It's gotta be something special if I'm shelling out that kind of coin.
Yeah, not for an album I rate a 6.
Yeah, no.
That's right. Honey, you bought Kiss Destroyer, right? The Resurrected.
Yeah, I did.
Well, that set you back, roughly?
$20.
Is that about right these days for a new vinyl?
It depends on what it is. Like, if it's something that's kind of widely pressed like that, you're not gonna pay as much. If it's something that's maybe a little more limited, maybe $30.
Yeah, I'd love to give the like to go get the Hawkwind vinyl reissues, but man, I don't think I can afford those.
Yeah, I saw like a live Hawkwind one for cheap. I should have bought it. It was like $10. It was brand new too. But yeah, no, that kind of runs the gamut. If it's a German release though, you're gonna pay like $50. And there's a label called Music on Vinyl that does great stuff. Like they put out like Faith No More's catalog and stuff, but they're from Germany, so you know, if they put out something, be prepared to pay out the nose. But they do a great job with it.
All right, now if you guys played on Vinyl's Van Halen collection on CD, okay, go out and buy the 2000 remasters. Don't get the 2008 ones. Don't get the early pressings because they stink. Look for the ones down the bottom left-hand corner, I think it is, or right-hand corner. It says HD CD. Doesn't matter if you haven't got a HD CD player. Your CD player will handle it, and they sound amazing. These are the versions to get. They're the ones you got, right, John?
Yeah.
I had the 2004 remasters.
Okay.
And and they sounded really good.
Yeah, mine are from like 2000, so they're
that's the ones
really good.
Well, is that it?
We're done? That's it. That's Van Halen. Unless we have any other thoughts to throw out there, the DLR years.
I'd say check them out if you haven't listened to Van Halen.
Like, one, what the fuck's wrong with you? And two, go listen to some motherfucking Van Halen. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look past 1984. Obviously, just don't judge them by 1984.
I don't know, as good as it is, got me into them. So it kind of depends on you, I guess.
Yeah, it depends on the person. I mean, but obviously, a lot of people just go, "Well, I've got 1984. I don't want to trek back into their back catalog.
Get
I'm interested."
The first record, like at least, you know.
I'd say stick. I'd say don't start with Diver Down or A Different Kind of Truth. No, don't go there.
Start with the first album. That's the perfect place to start. It's a perfect record. That'll get you going. That'll make you want to listen to everything else.
No, go Women and Children first. It's the best album I've ever made. Start with that. Don't listen to these guys. Start with Women and Children first.
No.
It's the best one. No way. World peace could be achieved if everybody just held hands for 37 minutes and just listened to Women and Children first.
It could be. We should tell the people at Gitmo and any make the Islamists listen to Van Halen. They'll come over to America because they'll be like, I must see this magical band live. I don't care if the lead singer's a Jew.
This Jew rocks.
This Jew makes me want to cut off beard and grow out hair.
By the way, I just got an email from Rhino. Led Zeppelin first three albums newly remastered with additional disc, a previously unreleased companion audio super deluxe box set, CD, vinyl, digital, and HD audio.
$39.99 each.
Yeah. I love the Zepp, but I can't be suckered into buying the stuff over and over again.
No, they put out, it seems like Zeppelin gets their catalog redone like every 5 years.
Yeah, they do. And now Jimmy Page is hunting down rare concert audio, like he's really, really trying to track it all down.
Oh.
Not gonna have that Firm reunion anytime soon. So,
yeah, all the Honey Drippers.
Back
catalog as well.
Yeah. Robert Plant's doing country music now, and he's kind of made it clear he doesn't really want to reunite with Zepp.
Nick Lowe was on Corolla, and he talked about like they said, "Who are some classic musicians you met that you didn't like?" And he goes, "John Bonham." He goes, that guy was a complete fucking... He thought he was hilarious, but he was a bore. And Tony Iommi's autobiography, like, he said he loves John Bonham, blah, 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 but he said his sense of humor was just a little too intense. He said one time, they were coming off the stage with Ronnie Dio, and John Bonham was sitting there, and he said, "Hey, he sings pretty good for a fucking midget." And Ronnie, he said they had to hold Ronnie back because he was trying to, you know, attack John Bonham. And he said John Bonham was perplexed because he thought he was complimenting him.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, well, David Lee Roth hired midgets to be his bodyguards.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he did. I always thought that was cool about him. Is like he made fun of the whole celebrity thing. And, of course, nobody got the joke back then, but he would have, like...
How dare you exploit the midget people?
He'd be wearing his sunglasses like he's a celebrity, like a stuck-out celebrity, but he's surrounded by these midgets also wearing sunglasses with their arms folded.
They better be black midgets.
And if you've ever, if you can hunt it down, it's so worth seeing, is David Lee Roth's No Holds Barbecue. It is crazier than the Roth Show on Roku. That's a very restrained, nearing retirement Roth. The No Holds Barbecue is stunning. Like
I have to track it down.
I've heard about that. It's legendary. Yeah,
it is. I guess it used to be up on YouTube in its entirety, and I think you can only see bits and pieces and snippets. Woo. It is absolutely closest you'll get to like an hour into David Lee Roth's brain. It's frightening. It's like he's doing jujitsu with midgets. There's Playboy Playmates like dancing around with him to Chemical Brothers.
Oh,
covers.
God.
He covers ELO and the Chemical Brothers and some other stuff, and it's he covers Jerry Rafferty's Baker Street, and that's some of the stuff you can find on YouTube. And it's footage of him with the samurai sword and doing kung fu in the downtown Seattle in the middle of the street. And there's a commentary for it if you can find it, where he's talking about, yeah, we filmed this at 5 o'clock in the morning. That's actually a shower rod. We couldn't get a kung fu weapon at the time.
My God, mate.
It's insane stuff. It's really crazy. And he's got like a SWAT team running around his backyard. Like it's filmed at his mansion that he and his dad owned. He's reenacting scenes from like silent movies and with the Playboy bunnies and, you know.
I gotta see this.
It's unbelievable.
If we can find it, guys, we'll put it up on the website with the show notes, but
yeah,
we'll try and track it down. Just we can't promise you.
Some bootleggers do sell it. Like you can find it on the web if you Google hard enough. But it's out there. It must be seen. It's incredible.
Amazing.
Should be a Criterion release. It's that crazy.
Yeah. It could be right next to House. You know,
too enjoyable for a Criterion release, I think.
Yeah, he sold it as a videotape. It was a two videotape set, I think, at the Sam and Dave tour. And that was the only way to get it. And supposedly he sunk like $1 million of his own money into it, so it's really crazy.
I wonder if that's where Pantera, like, I don't know, Pantera did those, like, home videos things that were kind of a similar...
I don't know if they did anything as crazy as this stuff, but it must be seen.
Well, all right, fellas, on that note, you got anything else to say, Stu, now that you're back?
Yeah, back with zero voice. Just very good to be back. Yeah. I had this really, trust me, guys, I had to struggle to get on here today. I was debating whether to pull out again. I thought, I can't do it.
We had to have the Midnight Movie Cowboys team of doctors shoot Stu up with all kinds of adrenaline and stuff to get him on here, you know?
Actually, I got to thank my boss for this concoction he's told me, which was tea, honey, and scotch. And it worked somewhat.
Nice.
Yeah. A Glenlivet 12-year-old inside my thingo.
Well, we are glad to have you back, Stu.
Thank you. I got to say, honestly, like, I got to say this. You guys did an outstanding job with what you did in the time I was away. It was odd, waiting to listen to a new episode every week and thinking, oh, wow, can't see what Hunter and John got whipped up. And it's like, I'm listening to you guys talk about Godzilla and Town and Dreaded Sundown and John Milius. And it's like, man, this show's awesome. Like, oh, this is a show I'm on. Shit. Okay, I forgot.
That's anytime I've been absent, it's been the same thing for me. It's like I can't wait to hear what Stu and John talk about. Oh, yeah, you know. And then,
I gotta tell the truth. I actually got this really bad flu from being in the Yabba all this time. Dickhead.
Well, are you sure you didn't catch it from some broad when you were dancing for the Thunder from Down Under?
I wish. It wouldn't be so much a dance as like a belly flop, I think.
Yeah. That was awesome. Oh. Yeah. Listen afterwards for the plugs, but welcome back, Stu. And that's about it. Go listen to some fucking Van Halen. Get out of here. Adios.
Yeah. Bozy, bozy, bop.
See you later.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.